Every year, hundreds of thousands of Latinos set off on a risky journey north to the United States in search of work. Many are from the mountains and coastal plains of eastern El Salvador, where economic hard times have forced people to look for work elsewhere. In the first of three reports on Latino migration to the United States, NPR's Jerry Haddon begins at the trailhead, where poverty drives people abroad, and where some communities are thriving off the money sent home by relatives in the United States.
If you want to understand why one in four Salvadorans strike out for the States, part of the answer lies in your cup of coffee. A global glut of beans has caused coffee prices to collapse, and coffee workers across Central America are abandoning their homes. At a plantation called Prieto, in the lush and once prosperous highlands of Berlin, El Salvador, 33-year-old foreman Rafael Castellano no longer goes into the coffee bushes. The dark-haired man stays with his wife and four small kids in their tiny cement house on the plantation's perimeter. He says he has no one to supervise. There used to be a lot of people working here, he says, sometimes up to 200 employees fertilizing and planting. Now it's just me. This plantation is abandoned. Many of those I supervised have gone north. I've thought about going north too, because I'm not really earning anything now. Local officials say more than half of the region's 1,000 coffee plantations have closed due to the crisis. A prolonged Central American drought has undermined farming as well. These days on the streets of this fog-shrouded mountain village, you see only children, women, and the elderly. A gaunt 77-year-old farmer named Jose Angel Hernandez walks slowly up one of Berlin's main streets, eating a mango. With the air of a man who has much time on his hands, Hernandez says he once drew a steady wage picking coffee. Now he only occasionally finds work cutting firewood. Wide-eyed under his white sombrero, Hernandez says he only stays here because he's too poor to afford the thousands of dollars it would cost him to reach the U.S. illegally. My sister has some family in the States, he says. They say there are some rich places up north. I have grandkids there too, but no, they don't send money. When one grows old, he is forgotten by the rest. Most residents of Berlin receive little money in remittances. However, El Salvador tops the list of Central American nations in the amount it receives per capita from abroad. El Salvador received nearly $2 billion in the first half of 2003. That's more than all of the country's other sources of foreign income combined. Among the towns benefiting from remittances is Santa Elena, in the balmy Salvadoran lowlands. Nearly half the town lives in the U.S., and they've organized to send home lots of cash for community projects. The 30,000 people who've remained in Santa Elena used to be poor farmers. Now they have a new central plaza, a giant public swimming pool, a social hall, and an outdoor soccer complex, all financed by family abroad. A team of young teenagers is practicing soccer in the late afternoon. The boys have smart green uniforms and a couple of regional championships under their belt. Town elders say they're trying to hold on to these young people one by one and hope sports will entice some to stay in Santa Elena. 14-year-old goalkeeper Josue Atorome is nearly at the age when most young people leave town, but he says he wants to stay. For those who are already in the States, that's fine, he says, but those of us here should stick around. I want to be a pro soccer player, maybe on the national team, he says, God willing. 70% of the capital in Santa Elena comes from abroad. That worries resident Jose Antonio Carpicio, who runs the Committee of Santa Elenans Abroad, the group behind most of the fundraising for town projects. He fears that the town is living an illusion. If the flow of family remittances for any reason went down, he says, it would be disastrous. We depend on the U.S. The economists say it and everyone knows it. In Santa Elena, we lack a political vision to start businesses, a factory, a store, projects that can generate jobs here. Now there is nothing, he says. We are simply a consumer society. The massive migration has spawned some local entrepreneurship. The town has a couple of travel agencies and several encomenderos, people who fly back and forth to the States acting as informal postmen. Among them is Matilda Salaya. She and her husband lived in Los Angeles for 8 years. With their earnings, they opened up this spacious hardware store. Salaya sits in a plastic chair before a wall of paint cans, fanning away flies. Once a month, she says, she carries letters, clothes, and even tamales to Santa Elenans in Southern California. Because even though our relatives in the States can get the same food, she says, the people say the quality is missing. but they're just trying to conserve tradition, and in that way the links are maintained between communities. Some people even ask me to bring hugs to their relatives. While in L.A., she says, Santa Elenans form a long line to receive their goods and gossip from home. On occasion, the news is tragic. At the Romero house, just around the corner from Celaya's Hardware, family members are in a state of shock. They've just learned that the oldest child, 25-year-old Wilmer, has died in the scorching heat of the Sonora Desert in southern Arizona. He left home 1 month ago to the day to try his luck in America as an undocumented worker. Wilma's 14-year-old sister, Odalia, comforts her mother in the large tiled patio of their house. She says she received the devastating call from another migrant who was crossing the desert with Wilmer. Wilmer died in the arms of a woman, she says. According to the autopsy, he suffered a cerebral hemorrhage. As he was dying, he began to vomit foam and blood. He was able to give our telephone number to the woman so she could call us. Wilmer's mother, Blanca Romero, a local school teacher, says she had a bad feeling as her son was leaving home. I said to him, "Don't go for long. Don't worry," he told me. "It's just for a couple of days to check it out, and then I'll come back." It was 6 in the morning, she says. He opened the door and said goodbye. More than 400 people have died in the desert south of Tucson since 1999. This year alone, 18 were Salvadorans. Despite the risks, Mexican and U.S. immigration authorities say the number of Central Americans they catch and deport is rising. 15-year-old Eric Guevara is about to join the ranks of those who leave. He lives in Berlin in a roadside shack made of corrugated metal and branches, one of dozens that stretch around a bend in this mountain road leading, he says, to nowhere. I've been picking coffee since I was 7, he says. It's the only work around. My father is already in the States, and he called and said, whenever I want to come, I can. Coffee isn't worth it anymore, nor is studying. Guevara has little money to travel north, but he says that doesn't matter. Hanging around here, he says, life isn't going to get any better. Jerry Haddon, NPR News.
Tomorrow, the migration trail at its most perilous point, the Guatemala-Mexico border, where gangs, corrupt authorities, and a dangerous cargo train end the journey north for many Central Americans. Previous NPR stories about illegal immigration and photographs from towns in El Salvador are at npr.org.